Hi, I'm Kareem Webb, CEO and founder of Fourth Movement. So glad to be here today on the Bible of Cannabis podcast, Professionally Cannabis. Check us out.
Where do they go? The smoke rings I blow each night.
Oh, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the pod today, Kareem Webb, entrepreneurial activist and CEO of Fourth Movement, an LA-based organization spearheading projects for underserved communities to own and operate competitive retail businesses. Social equity initiatives are increasingly being worked into cannabis legalization legislation in some states in the US, but do they go far enough? I can't wait to hear your thoughts today, Kareem. So without further ado, Kareem, welcome to the Professionally Cannabis podcast.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm really excited to be here. I really appreciate the work that you all do. It's a podcast that I listen to, and I'm excited to share our point of view and some of our journey, and hope that your listeners, or I should say my fellow listeners, take some value out of our conversation today.
Well, that's absolutely brilliant to hear, and we are delighted to have you on. And Kareem, as a listener of the pod, you will know that our first and customary question for all of our guests is, what led you to the plant?
I think initially what led me to the plant is probably peer pressure and curiosity, in undergrad. My first experience with the plant was in college. But in this iteration as the CEO of Fourth Movement and in this business, what we're up to, it was really, the opportunity around social equity to create a business and a platform to, help people leverage the opportunity to make it the most that it could be, that we could actually have the most impact, be the most effective with what I think is the purpose, or should be the purpose, for social equity generally. Like, that is my passion, and I feel like it is, really up to this point, my life's calling.
And Kareem, for folks who are listening that might not be so au fait with social equity as a term, how would you define this? And what do social equity projects look like in practice? And perhaps, if you allow me one more final extension of this, how does this pertain to the cannabis industry?
Certainly. So social equity, when you hear the term, it typically, in cannabis at least, it refers to policy that a jurisdiction, either a state or a city, is standing up in order to provide opportunities, and set aside type opportunities, licensing, for people who typically come from some sort of traditionally disadvantaged or under-resourced background. And oftentimes in the cannabis space, the policy and the set-aside licenses are directed towards people who come from communities that were also disproportionately impacted by the application of criminal justice or cannabis arrests. There is a significant amount of, I think, pressure on policymakers in some jurisdictions to acknowledge that people were penalized, in a disproportionate way. Black and brown people, people who come from poor communities, et cetera, around possession and sale of cannabis, versus people who, might have grown up more suburban, typically more white, even people who were arrested for the same amounts of product were punished differently. And so those disparities are attempting to be addressed by providing opportunities for people to own businesses. And I think the assumption is that by getting an access to this license, they'll be able to stand up businesses, and that those businesses will generate revenue and profit that will help people improve outcomes that were depressed because of what happens when you go to jail or when you get arrested, and how you are kind of locked out of society, or that your outcomes are predictably worse than would otherwise be the case. And so, people from communities, and in aggregate communities, were disproportionately harmed, or disproportionately got worse health outcomes or educational attainment outcomes or wealth creation outcomes because they were over arrested around cannabis. Then the idea is, well, then let's make certain that we over index with the opportunity to be engaged on the commerce side of this industry. Now that we're reversing this trend of, not the cannabis business, which has, been in existence in perpetuity, being unregulated, to now regulating it and giving people an opportunity to be in business in a regulated in legal way.
And can you give us a bit of a flavor as to Fourth Movement, the work that you guys do, and sort of what in your prior professional life and background sort of led you to setting up this awesome organization?
Certainly. So what we do at Fourth Movement is, you know, we go out and vet, and train people who are qualified for set-aside licenses, and then help them apply for the opportunity so that they apply in a way that is best in class and as competitive as possible in the application process, which increases the likelihood of being successful in the application process. And then also stands up a singularly branded retail platform by which these people we trained become the owner operator. So they own the majority of the businesses. They've been trained, vetted and trained to operate the business as the owner. And then we support them with best in class, what we call shared services. So we do the HR, we do the accounting, we facilitate the supply chain, we facilitate the technology stack, run the website, do all of the things that you really have to onboard capital in order to attract best in class talent and have best in class solutions in order to deliver a best in class experience, both online and in retail. And then leverage that scale to increase profitability on behalf of our social equity partners. That's ultimately what Fourth Movement does. And we own IP, which is, you know, the retail platform that's called 64 and Hope. So in LA, we have 21 successful social equity partners who are all licensed, or, you know, their licenses are, you know, have been reserved, so to speak, and so they're in different stages of the entitlement process. But the first of these 21 licensees will be open, actually be soft open August 30th. And we believe like over the next 2 to 2.5 years, we'll get the entire footprint of 21 units open in Los Angeles. And then we went through a similar process in Illinois. We were successful with one of our social equity partners. So we think over the course of the next year, we'll get that unit up in Illinois. And then, you know, there are other places in the country where we intend to compete and employ our model.
And Kareem, across the US, we've really seen some amazing social equity projects in places like San Francisco, Los Angeles, Oakland, as the cannabis industry in these areas has developed. For you, what would you say are the hallmarks of a successful and robust equity initiative? And are there specific parts of the cannabis value chain that you think are perhaps better suited than others to giving folks opportunities to work in the industries? Now, I know your core focus is on the retail space.
Yeah, so I will answer the second question first. What is most lucrative, you know, and the place where I think is the best element of the industry to focus varies by region. So in other words, in California, where from a biomass perspective, supply chain perspective, product is ubiquitous, I think retail is kind of king. Owning the shelf space makes the most sense. If you go into Illinois, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, et cetera, where you've got, for instance, in Illinois, you've got 300,000 tons of demand, of biomass demand, consumer demand in Illinois, and you have less than 100,000 tons of biomass currently entitled, let alone, you know, stood up and actually functioning. And so, you know, what and a quality eighth goes for in LA versus what a quality eighth goes for in Illinois is 2.5 times. And so I think at least in the short and medium term, I'm talking about over the course of the next 10 years or so, I think that the biomass side, so the cultivation side and maybe even the distribution side of the business is probably more lucrative in the limited supply states versus the state like California or Washington or Oregon or Colorado, where I think, you know, retail probably has more leverage. What we've seen in the industry around social equity and what makes for good social equity policy, I think is one, people actually having the opportunity. So, you know, what we've seen in Los Angeles is significant delays that have been financially harmful to social equity program participants. But ultimately, of the 400 retail licenses within the city of Los Angeles, you know, you're going to have more than half of them be social equity licensees. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. And I think that there's the chance to have success. I don't think in anywhere we've really seen success, you know, at any scale yet. And I think the measurement of success is that you got to have more success stories than not, based upon the total opportunity that's been given in any jurisdiction and then nationally in aggregate. We haven't seen that yet. We haven't had time to see it yet either, given, you know, there's been really kind of a limited number of social equity licenses issued in both San Francisco and in Oakland. Los Angeles, we're just starting the beginning of starting to see social equity licensees and retail locations starting to open. A year from now, 18 months from now, you'll see, you know, north of probably 100 units open. Then the question will be, how well capitalized are they, and how well can they compete in the marketplace? Social equity, to be successful, people actually have to make money. And the cannabis space is a very, very competitive space. And if you're not well capitalized, and if you don't have the acumen or aren't surrounded with the acumen, you know, in your enterprise, and that acumen is not employed in a smart, strategic, consistent way, you're going to have a tough time being profitable. And you got to be profitable, and then you have to have the character to kind of do the right things with those profits, in order to impact the communities that have been disproportionately impacted by the application of criminal justice. And then in so doing, social equity is successful. So until we get to that piece, who, you know, did these social equity limited license licensees make money in this business? And then when they made money, did they start impacting community, not only themselves and their family, which does make a difference, but the greater community that was harmed by the over-policing of cannabis and the over-arrest and the over-sentencing around cannabis. That's the only way we really reverse some of the harm. And social equity programs aren't successful unless we reverse some of the harm.
Sort of building on that, you mentioned about the delays that we've seen in some of the areas in California with regard to the social equity projects. And, well, of course, cannabis legalization is sweeping through the states at the moment. And there really has been I'd say a mixed bag insofar as the degree of which social equity has been wrapped into legalization legislation, you know, the ways in which states are dealing with folks that may have had previous nonviolent drug charges, for example, expungement of records, and ultimately the support given to communities who have been disproportionately affected by archaic drug policies. You know, New York is one of those states who've recently legalized and in some circles have been applauded for their emphasis on social equity within their legislation. What do you think, Kareem, that legislators who are yet to change their drug laws can learn from states who have already legalized or decriminalized? What have some places done well, and is, you know, what have they got right? And conversely, where do you think policy and the practical application of policy hasn't really gone far enough or not really gone anywhere at all?
You know, it's somewhat of a conundrum. You know, what we've seen happen in Los Angeles, I think we saw it happen similarly in a sense and differently in other sense in Illinois, is that, you know, you get people who really care about, let's start here. First of all, social equity policy is not something that is necessarily in the interest of the first movers in the cannabis space. Mm-hmm. So when you get to the, let's call it the multi-state operators in our industry, you know, they're referred to as MSOs. And those MSOs in most states were in limited license states for medical licenses. So in Illinois, there were however many there were, 12, 13 total businesses that were allowed to have licenses where you had to be vertically integrated, meaning you had cultivation, manufacturing, distribution, and retail. You had all elements of the business within one business. The same thing happened in New Jersey. The same thing happened in Pennsylvania. Same thing happened in New York. Same thing happened in Florida. You know, and all of those first movers were majority white, if not only white companies who were able to go raise a lot of money and be first movers. So when you've raised that money and you are first mover in the state, your goal is to, you know, continue to increase shareholder value. It's not to really dilute your footprint or your opportunity moving forward, is to continue to gain more and more market share. So that was in the interest of the first movers, and none of the first movers really across the country were people of color, and there was no social equity type emphasis or program in any of these states. So that's first. All the first movers, all the money, all the early success excluded people who were disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs. And so then you have, as you went from the medical license space to the adult use space, you have progressive legislators and policymakers in cities and states who advocated for policy that would include generally people of color, right? And then negotiated policy kind of backed by and supported by community activists who were insisting on inclusion in the process. And in more progressive, or let's just call it democratic states, you got social equity policy. Mm-hmm. So if you notice, there is no social equity policy in any Republican-led governor state, right? There's not one in Missouri. There's not one in Oklahoma, you know, which are also adult use states. But there is in California. There is in Illinois. There is in Massachusetts. There will be in New York. It is a blue state, red state issue. And what we've seen in blue states is that you get social equity policy that really focuses on trying to create some fairness in terms of who gets the opportunity, but the policy doesn't go far enough to be designed to ensure that the people who get the opportunity are really successful with the opportunity and that the community benefits from the character of the individual who gets the license, i.e., we end up with lottery type programs in Illinois, which, you know, you don't really know the character of the person who's going to get the license. I don't think that's in the interest of social equity. And then, you know, you also, you know, are not able to really understand the business plan or the ability for people to capitalize the opportunity in a way that would lead it to be kind of predictively successful or competitive within the space. And so I think what will end up happening is in Los Angeles, you'll get a lot of social equity licensees who will, those licenses will end up being distressed assets. And I think you'll find the same thing in Illinois. We just know that there's a lottery last week and the week before last. And there are articles out there where there are social equity individuals who, you know, won the lottery and they're out attempting to sell those licenses to the highest bidder, which is certainly not in the interest of community and social equity. If they just one person has a license, they get some money one time to sell that license. The business never gets stood up. That person who, you know, you would assume would be predisposed to hire people that maybe people from the majority community wouldn't hire. All of the things that matter around local ownership, you know, acumen and, you know, people growing, thriving businesses doesn't end up happening. So in those ways, the policy has failed, you know, in both of those jurisdictions. From what I understand and what I hear about New York, I think they're trying to get it right. They're trying to do it in some sort of meritorious process, which is what I believe in and what's in the interest of community. You know, they're trying to do it, you know, where people really get trained, where they bring in, you know, community partners and people who have, you know, skill set around workforce development, et cetera, to, you know, prepare people for running businesses and, you know, trying to select the people who are actually going to run the most competitive businesses and couple them with money and, you know, kind of real estate, commercial real estate companies who will, you know, kind of, you know, allow people to lease in competitive retail locations. Those are the types of considerations I think programs have to really dig into in order for it ultimately to be successful in the most meaningful way, which is what I hope will happen. So I think New York has learned a lot from what's gone wrong in California, what went wrong in Illinois.
And in areas where policy doesn't really look like it's supporting change in a meaningful and impactful enough way, what would you say, Kareem, that business leaders operating within the industry can and should do? What sort of initiatives have you seen from the business world that have ticked all the boxes for you? And sort of what impact can business leaders themselves have on pushing through policy change that would indeed facilitate more meaningful social equity initiatives within them?
Yeah, I think it's important for people trying to do the right things for the right reasons to be successful in their businesses and mm-hmm. use those as, you know, business cases for doing more of that. Because I think that's what people will pay attention to long term. What's successful and who is being positively impacted by that model and how? And when you can prove that, then you can kind of justify, you know, the growth of that model. And I think that's what's important at the beginning. You know, I think there's a lot of personal preference and commitment around fairness mm-hmm. that people have to search their hearts out for as leaders. So if you are a leader of a business, if you own a business, where there you have an opportunity to develop people. You have an opportunity to diversify your supply chain. You have an opportunity to be intentional about who the beneficiaries are of your enterprise, then do that. You know, and I think that there is business growth and market growth potential, you know, in diversity. You know, I think that studies would show in and outside of cannabis that there is value in diversification. And I think there's a lot of credibility in it too.
And who else in the space do you see or have you identified as folks that are doing really great things in the social equity realm? I know sort of the last time we spoke, which was at the GCI Summit, I had also had a conversation with Jason Wild and NBA All-Star Chris Webber, who are launching their own socially conscious private equity fund. Sort of what other or who are the other folks in the space that are sort of leading the charge alongside you that you think are really doing great things?
Yeah, I love what Chris and Jason and Lavetta and their team are doing, you know, over there, because they're raising a significant amount of money. $100 million is a lot of money to be in, to be able to invest in these businesses that have these licenses. And, they've got a strategy. You know, I think it's an effective and powerful strategy as they implement it. And Jason Wild is an executor, right? Like it's going to happen. And I think Chris is and his partner, Lavetta, are really smart and are committed to doing things the right way. I don't know of anybody else at that kind of scale that's positioned to be able to leverage and move capital in that way. And they're doing so. And they're in the social equity space in Detroit and in Michigan, in Illinois, in Los Angeles. You know, making a difference for entrepreneurs who really need that capital to compete. So I think they're doing a great job. I think Paul Judge has an initiative in Georgia that I think is really exciting and is getting engaged in Virginia. And with his background, you know, in technology, I think the acumen that he brings to the table and what he's going to be doing with his group is exciting. I'm excited for what they're building. You know, I actually think some of the government relations work and the long-term strategy of Canopy and what Canopy is doing is really interesting to me. And I think they think about it in a real smart enterprise way, that there's value to be accrued to them, that there's ways to leverage their approach to social equity and equity in this industry that will move the bar from a policy perspective in a way that's in the interest of their enterprise and shareholders. So I think they think about it strategically in a way where there's win-wins. On the parent company side, outside of their social equity fund, you know, you've got real, you know, kind of culture giants on that side of their business. And, that, you know, their product is quality and that there are people of color who are sensitive to and culturally competent in terms of what really is wanted and needed to happen that are in the industry in a, you know, in an earnest, determined and consistent way. And I think that matters. I think talent being in the industry of culturally competent people who are unapologetic about fairness and equity matters. I think what Al is doing in Viola is important. Al is you know, probably the most visible and up to this point, most successful in terms of having product in stores and having a national footprint, African-American in the space. His recent alignment with Allen Iverson, some of the talent that he's brought on board, that is, you know, African-American and Latino, Chicano talent really matters and his success really matters. And then I think that there are some social equity players that are more regional at this time, but are best in class in their execution. Chris Ball Family Farms out here in L.A. You know, I think, they're just examples of how you can prove that cultural competency matched with tenacity and grit and industry, you know, knowledge and acumen can lead to, you know, being an industry leader. And, you know, all of those examples are examples of folks who I think are industry leaders and are poised to take off in this business. And I think all of which are also looking for people to bring along with them.
Well, Kareem, I am devastated that we have run out of time here today, but I am so looking forward to welcoming you back to the pod in a future season when a lot of these stores are up and running and seeing how things are going at that point. But for the time being, as I mentioned, unfortunately, the clock has beaten us. So I'd like to say once again, Kareem, thank you for joining us on the Professionally Cannabis podcast and keep up the good work. We absolutely love what you're doing.
And we love what you're doing, Jonathan. Thank you so much for the platform and caring enough to have us back. And I promise the next time I'm come back, it'll be with Asia and or one or two of our social equity partners. We'll be sitting around the table and you'll be hearing from their perspective and point of view as well.
please take me above. Take me with you.